Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. How would you break down what went wrong last night?
Well, I think under the greatest pressure, your greatest weakness will be exposed. And we've talked all year about the Leafs' inability to defend. And in the greatest pressure, they couldn't defend. So, I mean, yeah, it would have been nice to get a shot somewhere in that 10 minutes, but they couldn't defend. And I never mind whether Anderson was good or not, because he wasn't. He was no worse than the guy at the other end, by the way. I mean, Tuukka Rask was playing dodgeball down there. And so Anderson didn't have a good night. And yes, we know Gardner didn't have a good night. He had a terrible night. The fact of the matter is, as a team, they don't defend well enough. Their defense, the six bodies they put out there, are not good enough as a group. And so, to me, that's what I thought was the deciding factor. I'm with you. I thought Boston looked off. It was 4-3. I'm like, I don't think Boston can keep the puck away from their net long enough for Toronto not to score another goal. Like, I can't even remember a good save Rask made.
No, me neither.
Like, not one. I can't, you know, Anderson made a couple good ones, and then, of course, the thing all fell apart on him. But so I thought if Toronto gets a couple of chances, they'll probably get another one here. I thought they were in good shape. As it turned out, you know, they didn't get a shot for, what was it, 8 minutes of the third period? And so they don't get any shots. Now the puck's back in their end. And, you know, of course bad things happen. But to me, it all stems back to the fact that we spent hours talking this winter about their defense. And we kept coming up with the same conclusions. And eventually it just, you know, there it is. There's nowhere to hide on it now.
So play GM, because everyone asks us, how would you fix it? How would your approach? We've already discussed the fact that you need to just walk away from this and take a deep breath and not go crazy. But
yeah,
what would your approach be to try to rectify it for next year? Because that's obviously the glaring element of the team that needs to be addressed.
Well, the first thing is you make your decisions on Van Riemsdyk, Komarov, and Bozak. It seems likely that at least two of them are gone, maybe all three. So you make that determination. Then you try and ballpark what you're going to have to pay William Nylander, because that's immediate. Then you get it. You know, you're going to get into your discussions with Matthews and with Marner, but they've at least got another year. You have a little bit of time to get through the summer to play around with that. To me, I have to make an evaluation of what Nikita Zaitsev is, if I'm the organization, because you got him for six more years. Gardner's going into the last year of his contract. Are you going to bring him back, or are you going to move on him? Are Dermott and Gardner the same guy? You know, like play the same role in your lineup. I'm going to try and acquire at least one and probably two defensemen. Who's available? Do I have to trade for them? You got to remember, Ron Hainsey is going to be 39 next year.
That's the concern for me, Reyes. They got everything they could have out of him.
They skated him, and they turned him 45.
If he's not on your third pairing next year, you're in big trouble.
So look at their defense. You've got Zaitsev, who woefully underperformed this year. Hainsey, who had a fantastic year, but he's going to be 39. And Roman Polak. Like, that defense, that right side of your defense is not going to get it done for you. If you can move Hainsey down, great. But that means you've got to get a top two guy, a top two pair guy on the right side. Where are you going to find that? Well, you're going to have to cough somebody up. You're either through trade or move a draft pick, a high pick. Like, you're going to have to make a deal to improve that defense. They don't have anybody that's ready-made like Travis Dermott. And Dermott will have his growing pains, but I don't see too many evaluations that don't see Travis Dermott as a top four defenseman.
Well, the one thing you can't do as well is you can't pull a Montreal and go give the kind of money they gave to Carl Alsner.
No.
You can't do it.
Well, that's the thing, though.
That's an old-style defenseman, isn't it? You know, Carl?
Yeah, I mean, you need some toughness, Ray, and somebody that can defend back there, but I don't think you can make that move where you're like, oh, he was the best guy available. We got to pay him a bunch of money. That's not the right thing to do. You got to look real hard and exhaust every option.
John Carlson, is the name that everybody's going to kick around, and that's $7 million.
How do you feel about him, Ray?
I like him.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I was actually really impressed in Washington. I did that game last week there. I was like, wow, he looks really like he's, you know, become a man in the position. He doesn't look like he's skittering all over the place and, you know, careening from one side of the ice to the other. He looked really, really good. Now, here's the problem, though. So say you get into him for $7 million, and you've still got Marner and Matthews and Nylander, among others, that you're going to have to sign. Like, there's only so much room in the cap. Here's another thing. Patty Marleau is going to be 39 next year.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to get 25 to 30 from him again? He sure looked great yesterday, and he had an excellent year, but is that year there again? I don't know.
That's up for debate.
It better be.
Yeah, exactly. They committed to it. Like you just said about Zaitsev, like they have to review what they have. Well, they reviewed it a year ago, and they decided it was worth a 7-year commitment. So
yeah, but they, you know, but they, you've got him now. That's my point. You've got to review what you have. Is he a third pair guy for you, or is he a second pair guy? Because he sure didn't play like a second pair guy.
Well, not even close. That's not even up for debate.
But he did a year ago. That's the thing. Like, as a rookie, he was a really solid second pairing guy. So who
is
he?
Yeah, but now you can't. But you can't walk from him because you know everybody else knows he's got 6 years left.
Yeah.
On his contract too. So there is, you know, what was the reason that he was not the same as he was 2 years ago? Can you get him back there? That's part of the discussion.
Well,
but there, to me, whenever I think about the Leafs, it's funny with all their talent, all their offensive ability, I always think about their defense first. And you know, guys, I like goals. I want lots of goals. But I look at that defense and I go, oh, boy, it's just not good enough.
Yeah, it's got to be balanced. I mean, because they scored 4 last night and it wasn't enough. Like, you score 4 on the road in a playoff game, you should win that game every day of the week. And not only was it not enough, it was 3 short of being enough. They gave up 7. Now, 1 was an empty net. But this is where, you know, every dollar counts. And I think the most prominent conversation in the city this upcoming summer will be the contracts for Marner, Matthews, and Nylander. And there's a lot of people that are sour on Matthews. This is the first time he's experienced it in this market because everything has gone beautifully for him. The first game he ever played, he scored 4 goals. I mean, everything has worked out for him. And he did not have a very good series. He's capable of a lot more. But come July 1st, he's going to ask for a lot of money. And the Leafs are going to give him a lot of money. So,
and they should.
They should. But they got to be ruthless, right? Like, they're going to give him an 8-year deal, and if he's willing to take it, they'll be ecstatic about that. It's going to fall somewhere between $10 million a year and $13 million a year. Who's going to win the tug of war? Because if it's closer to 10, that's a win for the Leafs. If it's closer to 13, that's a loss for the Leafs.
But here becomes the, you know, like I had some time yesterday, so we get into the, you know, people are like, you know, he's no leader. And go back to some of the great leaders that we consider great leaders and check out the first few years that they played. Like, you know, Steve Yzerman was not a great, nobody ever thought of Steve as a great leader when he was getting going. Because the Wings were terrible. Matthews is in the, you know, he's in the playoffs his first 2 years. He scored 74 goals. Like do you not think he's looking at Jack Eichel's contract and saying, good, well, we'll start here?
No, like start.
Yeah, like that's just the beginning point. Matthews is, and this thing about whether he's a captain or not a captain, and look, your captain doesn't need to be a speech maker. Like when Ronnie was the captain, we both think the world of Ron Francis. When Ronnie was a captain, how often did he give a great speech?
No.
Never.
No, it would just be a look or just an expression. That was all it took. And
he doesn't need, like, Matthews is not going to be a great orator. He's not going to be great and give us great funny quotes. Who the hell cares? The guys in the room, they know if he's a leader or not. The coaches, they know whether he's a leader or not. My brother-in-law coached him at the National Development Program. He can't speak more highly about Austin Matthews as a leader. And he was an underage player there, too.
Right.
He was just a kid.
Do you not think the as far as their approach with this guy, like, you look at the Boston Bruins, and did they rely heavily on that Patrice Bergeron line? Yeah, they did, but that was only because they had a lot of other skill guys, Rick Nash, Riley Nash. Krejci wasn't really a factor. But do you not think they need to put it into a situation where it's more, he's the more of a spotlight number one centerman with real top-end guys? And yeah, like a power play unit, it's him going over the boards with Mitch Marner every 4-on-3. It's like, give him a chance to really be that guy instead of just a guy with some line mates. Although Connor Brown is a great player. I think Hyman's a fantastic forechecker. But it's not that spotlight first line like another team has.
Oh, don't you think? Like, there absolutely is a place on winning teams for Connor Brown and Zach Hyman.
He's one of our favorites.
I think those two guys do an awesome job. Hyman is, I would love to have played on a line with Hyman. Like, I just, that would have been a guy I know I would have been really successful with. But when David Pastrnak, who's 21 years old, goes over the boards, he goes over every shift with Bergeron and Marchand.
Mm-hmm, the three of them.
Those are elite, elite, elite. And that, you were giving the best possible chance for the elite skill of Pastrnak to be used in the best possible way.
Exactly.
And I do think that's where the Leafs, that's one area that the Leafs can do a better job with.
Well, do you think, I mean, you guys have been in this position as really good players, young players. Do you think, can you picture Matthews in the postseason conversation with Babcock campaigning for that? And saying, you got to play me more, because we looked this up earlier, Ray. Like, the past seven games, again, were not good enough. I thought he had a great first period last night, and he kind of blended into the game last night. But he had some injury problems. But if you prorate his numbers over 82 games this year, he would have ended up with, like, 45 goals and 85 points. That's a great year for a guy who was on the second power play unit all year and registered the 38th most minutes or minutes per game on average compared to every other center in the league.
Yeah, it's like anything else. You have a little bit of less than everyone else, but we expect you to do the same. It's not realistic.
Right. Like,
he is that great of a talent, but why not give it everything you can to make it the beast that it can be?
To put this into perspective quickly again, he was 38th in average ice time per centerman in the league. Nick Schmaltz averaged more ice time than him. Joe Thornton. I was shocked by that. Joe Thornton.
At 40
with those kind of injuries, played more than he did. He was right around Tomas Hertl and Mika Zibanejad. They played him like a second-line center.
And he scored 34 goals in the limited number of games that he played.
Exactly.
Now, I don't know what the conversation is like in that meeting. Like, sometimes I'd go in there and I'd be so sour at the way I got used or the way the year ended, and I'd have all these things to say, and by the time you get out of there, you're like, man, I didn't even say half the things I wanted to say. I don't even know how that happened. And other times you would just have this great conversation where you got out what you thought. I would tell him, not that he's listening, but I would say, get out what you want to say. You don't have to go and, you know, and put the toilet seat on anybody, but you could say, like, I think I've got more to give here. I know I can score more. I know I can help our team more. Like, that would be the way I think to go about it. Because how could you deny that that's not possible, at the very least? Like, how could you, if you're anybody sitting at the other side of the table and he comes in and says, hey, guess what? I want to play more. I think I can do more for this team. And who's going to deny that? Look at him.
Well, and to put this into perspective again with the minutes, like I said, he averaged, Austin Matthews this year averaged 18 minutes and 8 seconds per game. That was his average. Now, it fluctuated per game, obviously, but over the course of the season, 18 minutes and 8 seconds. Last night, he played 18 minutes and 6 seconds.
And we don't make decisions, and they don't care what we think or say, but I think this is a really big deal, and they have to look at it. Ray, do you agree or no?
Yeah, because he's one of their difference makers.
Yeah, he's one of the best players in the world.
You can't always play, in my mind, especially today. When I say today, I mean in the way the game is officiated and played now. You can't play as conservatively as teams used to play. Because if you wanted to play conservatively, you'd hold on, you'd hook, you hold, you'd chip the puck out, you'd dummy the game down. Now you just, you have to skate, you have to create. Look at the way a defense is built. It's not built with a bunch of clunkers. It's built with a bunch of guys that can move the puck. And so if you're taking Austin Matthews and clipping his minutes, and he's getting 18 minutes, but he's always on the second power play. He's always playing with players that are probably not as creative as the guys that you would think he should play with, then his numbers are going to suffer. His numbers suffer, that means you suffer. And I don't know how that's not really clear.
Yeah, I think it most certainly is. And we'll see what Babcock has in store. We'll see how Babcock gets evaluated. Like, he's not immune to evaluation himself. Someone's got to be reviewing what he's doing. And I'm not suggesting the pressure's on or he's on the hot seat or anything, but he has to keep growing with this group too. He's got to keep this team moving in the right direction, because last year you took a step, this year you took another one. People aren't going to wait for you to plateau now. You got to keep moving forward.
Now, I don't know, you remember the old Houston football coach, Bum Phillips,
mm-hmm.
and Houston was an awesome team, and they could never get by the Steelers. And so the reason I think of this is because they lost again, and he said in an interview after that, you know, 2 years ago we came to the door, the next year we knocked at the door, and next year we're going to knock the damn thing over. And so it's just what you say, the progression of what happens weighs on Babcock. Like, he told everybody in that introductory press conference, there will be pain. Well, it didn't manifest itself the way we thought, where they were going to lose 55 games. Man, they turned quick.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a spot I don't think any of us would have thought they would have been in a couple of years ago. But now the expectation bar is risen. And they've got to find a way to transition this roster, which is going to be very different from the one that'll be there in September, and try and keep the momentum of going forward. I don't know what it's going to look like. I think it's going to look really different. I think the lineup is going to look really different, and I'm curious what effectiveness it's going to have coming out of the gate next year. What's it going to look like? I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I look up front, and like I would guess, as of now, Johnsson and Kapanen are playing game one of 82 next
sure.
year. Right, so if you've got them making the team and they weren't a part of it out of camp this year, I don't think Van Riemsdyk's coming back. I don't think there's a chance that's happening. Komarov, if he comes back, it's like a one-year deal at like $900,000 kind of thing. You can be a part of it, try to make the team, we'll see what happens. I think there's a chance, if there isn't a market for Bozak out there, they can get him on the cheap. Maybe they bring him back as a depth guy, but if there is a market for him, he's going to have to go. So you're looking at your third and fourth line centers, at least one winger, if not a couple, and like you said, probably a couple of defensemen. And then on top of that, who knows if they make a drastic trade. You know, maybe they finally do pull the trigger on a trade featuring one of their young guys. There will be moving pieces, but
I mean, just think of, so let's delete Van Riemsdyk just for a second, just for a what-if game. So he's gone. Now you've got to replace those goals. Now, we're all excited about Andreas Johnsson. Man, he was terrific. But is he going to replace those goals? Not a chance. How's he going to do that? It's going to be his first full year. There is some funny parts going on here that are going to have to be figured out, and the decisions they make will affect whether the team is good out of the gate next year, or if we're going to have to wait for them to grow again. Like, they might go back before they go forward again. And that's just because they're going to get younger in some spots, because they're going to have to, some guys are going to just move on because of their contract spot and their leverage that, you know, Van Riemsdyk would have. He's got, can you imagine the leverage he's going to have July 1st?
He's going to get paid. Yeah, he's yeah. absolutely going to get paid, and he should take that money. I mean, he doesn't need me to tell him. Sure, he'd like to stay here. I'd like to keep him if you could, but I don't think it's going to work out financially. But I do separate this front office from other front offices throughout the league. Not all of them. There's a lot of very good ones. But I've been comfortable in my belief that they're going to get it right, because everything they've touched over the past few years has broken their way. And we were comparing them to the Oilers a year ago, where Edmonton was this young up-and-coming team, and obviously we saw what happened this season. And the reason I don't think that's going to happen with this Leaf team is because I think the front office has a better read on where they want to take the team. I think Peter Chiarelli overreacted and made some crazy moves, and some of the players didn't perform the way they were supposed to or the way that you expected them to, but I don't expect panic and a David Clarkson type move out of this front office.
No, you're right. I mean, that's if there's one thing. Now, there's another thing we haven't even got to, right? Is Lou part of the deal or not? Because that might change the way everybody thinks.
Yeah.
And so that's probably of the decisions that, you know, when O said, rightfully so, that, you know, you got to step back here for a little bit, that's probably the first of the decisions, the first of the dominoes that has to go down. Is Lou part of the management team going forward, or is he not?
I'm not sure he will be. I mean, everyone's got a different take on it. With this team and with Lou, you never know until a decision is actually made. But I could see there are going to be parts of this offseason where you would want him involved. I kind of want him involved in the contract negotiations. No one's done more of them than Lou Lamoriello. But do I need him involved in it when it comes to the trades and free agency? I don't know.
Well, and then, of course, if Lou comes back, you know, the pieces that get affected by that are Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas.
Right.
And that's all part of this front office that you were just talking about that we have confidence in to make the right moves, because everybody seems to be in a really great place. But if they want to be the GM, or if they get an offer from somewhere else, then all of a sudden you've got a little bit of a pressure point. It's a complicated summer in Toronto and you know, you can't forget they made the playoffs. It's hard to make the playoffs. They had a chance in Game 7. They kicked it away. Yet now you get into, now what's going to happen? And I don't think there's any, like some years there's a lot of clear answers. I don't think there is right now.
No, there really isn't. Well, we got all summer and all spring to figure it out, and the second round kicking off tonight. So we'll get you back here tomorrow at 5, and we'll start breaking down the second round, and we'll keep seeing where the Leafs take it.
Awesome. Good to talk to you guys. See you tomorrow.
All right, buddy. This is Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst.